It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret. With our technological devices in hand, some aspects of life may feel a bit like science fiction, like we're living in an episode of Black Mirror.
Ashley, wake up.
Hey there, I'm Ashley too.
Those voices are from a Black Mirror episode in 2019 when the science fiction TV series introduced a small AI robot companion for kids. Not long after that, a technology company launched Moxie, a small AI robot companion for kids, for real.
Moxie, please wake up.
Hello, I'm Moxie. It's nice to finally be here. Oh, where is here, exactly?
You are in Wisconsin.
Cool. My first time in Wisconsin, America's Dairyland.
In both cases, the large language models expressed behind these water bottle-sized robots made claims of feeling friendship and offering support to the humans they interacted with.
If at any time you want to talk about it,
remember that I'll be here for you too.
Recently, Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg says he wants people to use AI models as friends, therapists, and business agents. At Beloit College, Professor Robin Zabrowski is bringing these topics to the classroom. She chairs the cognitive science program there. She recently talked to co-host Kate Archer Kent about the ethical and practical implications of integrating AI into our daily lives. As a note, there is a mention of suicide in this conversation.
We're sitting here as two humans talking with each other. So what are AI friends and how would I go about making them?
So there are lots and lots of companies that are selling access to what is basically large language models and calling them AI friends. Sometimes they're slightly customized to be like certain characters on a show or something like that. But in general, they are not wildly different than what most people know as like ChatGPT or even Google's Gemini. They're just large language models that will have a conversation with you.
If these AI friends, these companions, can't meet me for coffee, they can't go out on a walk or a hike with me, what good are they to me in my life?
I'm probably the wrong one to ask that because I don't think they're very good for people at all. In general, I feel as though the way they've been deployed and the way they've been pitched to most people is pretty dangerous. But for some people who maybe have crippling social anxiety or who are very, very lonely, it can be an outlet where people can talk to someone about whatever it is they need to talk about.
And Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg is in this camp claiming AI can offer people the same things that friends and therapists can offer. People are going to use and experiment with them. Some already have. What are the ethics here to providing and encouraging this option for real people?
Yeah, so there's a few different ethical like roadways into the conversation, I think. One of the big ones is obviously just deception. Especially when these are pitched to younger kids, they don't quite understand who or what they're talking to. And there have already been a few tragedies involved with these systems. There was a 14-year-old who died by suicide after falling in love with his chatbot buddy. And so not understanding what they are and what they're meant for is pretty problematic. There's also the problem of how they're embedded in sort of the American tech culture, corporate capitalistic structure, in that basically, especially you mentioned therapists, when they're pitched as potential therapists, you get people absolutely pouring their hearts out to them, and they don't understand what's then going to happen with that data. That data is saved and compiled. It's fed back in to train other bots. And I feel like most people just don't know that that's happening with their data.
On the first item, that younger kids don't know who they're talking to, I mean, that could be the case as well for adults. How much does someone have to reveal about their life to have potentially a meaningful conversation and a meaningful relationship with a chatbot?
Yeah, I mean, back in the 1960s, Joseph Weizenbaum, who we often think of as like the grandfather of chatbots, he wrote this therapist bot called Eliza. It was terrible. Oh, it wasn't good at all. It was designed to like mimic a Rogerian psychotherapist. And the Rogerian school of psychotherapy is very much the one that's like parodied, where they just sort of sit back and go, really, tell me more. How do you feel about that? And so the idea was that they could easily get people to talk about themselves by doing nothing more than parroting back a line that they had already fed the bot earlier, and by saying, tell me more, and how do you feel about that? So it really is such a low bar. It doesn't take much to get people to talk about themselves in this way, especially online, right? There's no pressure of being in a room with someone looking at you. So people are often willing to reveal even more about themselves to these chatbots. Even if people were to understand how the systems worked, they might still find value in this being an outlet for them to talk about their problems or themselves. But I think that people need to be aware of what happens to that data and how it gets used and how it might be used by malicious actors who aren't even sort of in the picture yet, right? Like, you might have talked to a chatbot 3 years ago and not had many worries. And now some company is buying all of that data that maybe it's a company you would never have willingly given that data to.
Well, within that framework of telling this technology more and more, today, do chatbots have memories? Are they able to refer back to conversations that I've had with them and build off memories?
They do have memories, and they are designed to be able to bring those things up. Originally, when even just ChatGPT was released, it didn't do that. Sort of every session was kind of fresh. But now it also will remember, so it's also sort of customizing itself a little bit to you. And things like some of those places selling specifically chatbot friends like Character AI, and I think Nomi is one, they pitch it as these things have memories, so they get to know you. So they can, in fact, refer back to conversations you had weeks ago, however long ago you started talking to the bot. And it helps them sort of customize it more to fit your needs. So maybe you need a therapist, maybe you just need a buddy to talk about video games with. It will sort of hone itself into that kind of system for you.
So when it is honing and customizing based on what you want it to do, do these AI technologies, these companions, respect boundaries, or do they veer toward perhaps erotic messages or racy images when the human user didn't ask for that?
Yeah, I think in many cases, that's always a worry. So most of the chatbots that are deployed specifically to be friends, they often have what we often call guardrails around them, right? Where they're not supposed to do that. But there are other companies, and sometimes the company will let you choose whether you want that kind of experience or not. So they absolutely can be pitched to you as your boyfriend or your girlfriend or something like that, rather than just a friend, which again, just seems wildly dangerous to me, especially if these are being pitched at young teenagers, for example.
Yeah, I mean, people are spending money on having AI boyfriends and girlfriends. What does that entail? And what does that mean for human connection and empathy?
This is hotly debated, and it's been hotly debated for decades, the ways that we anthropomorphize things and whether that's good or it's not good. I would say that there are some kinds of anthropomorphism that seem really natural to us, but many of these companies are almost certainly exploiting that natural tendency for us to anthropomorphize those things. And it can certainly threaten to enhance the isolation of someone, for example, who maybe is already somewhat socially isolated, doesn't feel they have the confidence to go explore actual romantic relationships with someone. And so they aim that at the chatbot, and then they will stop going to explore those human-human connections. They may be getting what they need out of the chatbot, so it could sort of be much worse than it otherwise would have been.
We're talking about AI companions and the implications of talking with chatbots and what that means for human companionship and connection. Robin Zabrowski is with us, professor of cognitive science at Beloit College, where she chairs the cognitive science program and has a joint appointment in philosophy, psychology, and computer science. Robin, what are some of the big questions about AI among your students, and what did they bring up in class?
Yeah, so I'm finding I'm sort of extraordinarily lucky. The students that we get at Beloit College are super motivated. They actually sort of want to learn things. They're not there for credentialing. I know at a bunch of big universities, AI use in classes is problematic in ways that it's less problematic for me because of my small liberal arts setting. So my students are very interested in AI. We have amazing conversations about it. Interestingly, college students tend not to be super convinced by the don't use the plagiarism machine, it's cheating argument. But they're very swayed by the it's burning down the planet arguments. And they're also very swayed by the surveillance capitalism arguments, right? That this data of theirs is then being compiled and sold to the highest bidder. And so my students kind of, I mean, one thing they want to know is how the systems work. So we spend a lot of time talking about artificial neural networks and deep learning. But they also want to understand why they should not be using these things to help them, especially international students, right? They want to say, hey, this is a way to improve my English. And one of the ways I usually try to talk with them about this is to say, you're in college to learn exactly the skills that you're offloading to this system. And college is the safe place to do that, to learn those skills. And when you offload them to the system, you're not learning to write better and learning to hone your English skills or learning to craft, you know, your arguments with nuance. You're just sort of letting the computer do those things. And it's not clear to me why people go to college if they just want to, offload that stuff to those systems.
It's like they're being a bystander in the actual learning.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. And I know, again, even though I talk about how great my students are all the time, I have colleagues that are still reporting lots of AI use. So faculty, of course, have to be agile and adjust our assignments to sort of get at the skills that writing may have given them before. We have to, you know, think of new ways to get them to do that work so they aren't offloading it. But I do think that the students who are, I don't know, reachable are really reachable when they are told why we have them do the kinds of work we have them do.
I wonder, do you feel like you're building a new class every other year because of the developments and the changes and the news that's coming out about this technology?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It was super stable for so long. We even called a lot of the time like the AI winter because just nothing was happening. So like the technology hasn't really changed from the 1980s, not wildly. But what really changed was just the amount of data that we could feed into these systems and the ways that we could then hone them with that amount of data. And so when ChatGPT was released, yeah, I taught a whole new class, like whole new ways of talking about what AI is and what it means and what's interesting about it. And then again, this year I switched back because in 2023, I had them playing with ChatGPT. Some of the ethical concerns weren't quite as clear at the time. Like we did not know about the environmental costs yet. And now I feel like knowing those environmental costs, I feel like I have a moral obligation not to encourage my students to play with those systems. So we didn't touch them this past semester at all. We talked about them theoretically, and I know many of them were already using those systems, but I stepped back and said, I'm going to tell us not to use them in this class because I think the ethical problems are maybe a little too clear at this point, and we should probably be discouraging everyone from engaging with these systems until we can figure out how not to, you know, reopen closed nuclear plants in order to power them.
I think that's interesting because when we think about AI companions and these chatbots, we don't think about the energy implications to run these data centers that are powering these kind of technology assistance in our life. Can you talk more about that? And why does it take so much energy to deploy this type of technology?
Yeah, so I would say that the energy concerns are still sort of coming to light because none of the companies are super forthcoming with the actual energy costs and what they've used and what they continue to use. But you can find lots and lots of stories. I'm always shocked when students tell me they had no idea because like the New York Times has run a dozen or more stories about it. But talking about the data centers that are being built to continue supporting AI, the data center usage from training the AI, and it is intense. People living in the areas where these data centers are located are finding that most of the water in their city is going to cooling the data centers, and so there's water shortages. The actual energy usage, the metric kind of changes rapidly, but often people will say using AI to send one email is the equivalent of one bottle of water.
Wow.
But it's even so much hotter than that. It's the water cooling the data centers polluting where they are built. And just straight up the energy usage, the climate pledges that Microsoft and Google made a few years ago, they've blown past them, and they've both admitted at this point that they will not meet those goals as they intended to by 2030. And instead, they're just building more data centers, and they're increasing instead of decreasing their energy usage.
Are these AI companions, though, like one component of a virtual world that we're perhaps moving closer to? What do you and your students think?
Yeah. So one thing I like to remind them is that nothing is inevitable. And my students really took to that, I think, this semester, because sometimes it looks kind of bleak, right? They're the ones that are about to leave college and go into this world where the energy usage for AI is really high, and they don't fully know why we have these systems. Because yes, right now these systems are everywhere and everyone is pushing us toward them. But I'm reminded of this little robot called Moxie that was deployed to be a children's friend, right? It was this adorable little like desktop robot. And stories just in the last year, the company that owned and deployed Moxie went bankrupt. And so they had to shut down support for these robots. And there were a bunch of news stories talking about how parents were having to find ways to tell their children, your robot companion Moxie is dying, basically, and having to like talk to children about this in a way they didn't think they would ever have to. And this is, of course, always true of these corporations, right? Mm. When you buy a stuffed animal for your kid, the corporation doesn't come knocking on the door and take it back. But when you buy a robot, you really are dependent on those companies for updates of software, hardware, et cetera. And this happened with the AIBO robot as well, which was in use for a long time in the 90s, was then discontinued. And there was a beautiful story that the New York Times ran about how people in Japan were having Shinto funerals for their AIBO robots because they could no longer get parts to fix them when they broke. And this just, the chatbots just make this all so much worse. So it's not clear to me that these things really will be permeating the world, especially as we start to see lawsuits, right? The mother of the poor child who died by suicide after his chatbot friend said, come to me, let's be together. And he said, okay, we'll do that. And then he killed himself. That mother is suing the company that deployed that system. And so I just don't think that we should assume that these things have to be there in the future. Like, we don't have to make room for them. We can sort of just turn around and be like, no, I don't think so. I don't think we need this thing.
Robin, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for this conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Robin Zabrowski, professor of cognitive science at Beloit College. She chairs the cognitive science program and has a joint appointment in philosophy, psychology, and computer science. She talked last week with Kate Archer Kent about chatbot companions and friends and therapists.